would you like to buy properties at the best possible price? David Cinelli will tell us how. And what's so special about David is he's one of Canada's top performing real estate professionals, ranked in the top 1% nationwide, with nearly two decades helping clients buy, sell, and build wealth across Toronto's high stakes property market. He's also a familiar face on national television as a co-host of HGTV's Hot Market, where he showcases Toronto's top listings and teaches millions about the power of real estate investing. So, David, tell us about what can property investors do to buy properties at the best possible price?
Property Wealth Strategies podcast with Lily Patrashku shares world's most influential property investors, sharing their strategies for making money with property.
Well, that's a big question. I think a lot of times now, and if you're depending on where you're looking in your market, if you're looking at our market right now, there's a lot of inventory. So in order to, I think, to maximize your properties and the value you can get, if you go into areas which have multiple listings, in which you have a lot of power. The other thing is conditions really do help a lot along the way. So it's, there is more choice for buyers right now. We're in a buyer's market, but if you do things like, if you have a lot of cash on hand, you do like have a great deposit. If you're already pre-approved, if you are going to get a mortgage, if you're not going to do a cash payout, if you get pre-approved and you know exactly what you're looking for, that also helps as well. And the other thing is like conditions, right? Like I think a lot of times when I think almost all buyers, sorry, all sellers are looking for the least amount of conditions when they're selling a property. So conditions could be things like, financing conditions. Well, if you're pre-approved or if you have cash, you can easily get rid of that. Another thing is like if you have a home inspection, you want to tighten up some of the conditions you have. You do a home inspection, it's great to purchase a property with the home inspection, but you want to do that quickly as well, right? You don't want to drag it on for 2 or 3 weeks. That really will give a bad taste in your mouth. And the other thing is obviously there's other conditions which nobody wants to see, like the sale of a home. So those kinds of things really matter. So again, it's a lot of having a great deposit, sometimes giving the seller the closing date they're looking for. So therefore, if they want to close the property quickly, it helps obviously to match their expectations for closing, and having those conditions tighten up really, really do help along the way. It's not always the purchase price, right, that matters to sometimes sellers. Sometimes those other parameters really play into whether they're going to sell or not.
Thank you. Tell us about how can property investors find below market value properties or properties that are market value and that perhaps other buyers will not be able to kind of like access as fast because perhaps they're, I don't know, they're off the market or they're coming from a source that perhaps you wouldn't expect.
So it's a great question. One of the things I always say is like you want to look at, and this might sound bad, but look at properties that have terrible pictures. Also that the agent has not done a good job of listing the property. In a buyer's market where we're currently here in Toronto, if you have a lot of inventory, you have to put your best foot forward, which means in order for you to get shown, you have to be priced well, you got to look well, you got to have all the advertisement done, it's got to smell good. The ones that don't have that, their agent is not doing them a service. So therefore, it might be sitting on the market a little bit longer. And that's the other thing you want to look for. Look for bad pictures, bad marketing, and also the amount of days it's been on the market. Because unfortunately, sometimes people are going to get desperate. And before they start to drop the price, you can probably go in and be able to purchase that property below market value. The other thing is, you do want to take a look at some of the listings. And we have apps here which shows listings have expired. Now, an expired listing, you might be able to knock on the door and say, hey, like even if you don't work with an agent, if you want to do it on your own, you might be able to knock on the door and say, hey, like, I know you were looking to sell the property before. Do you want to do something off market? And which you can engage with your own realtor if you would like, but it's obviously to cover your butt. But that's also an option in this type of market if it's something that you're interested in too. So those kinds of things really do affect, can really, really help you along the way. And just keeping your finger on the pulse. I always say it doesn't matter what property when it comes to the market, it's hard to get a property below market value as soon as the market hit, as soon as the property hits the market. It's because the sellers have a certain expectation as soon as the property hits, and that sometimes time will teach them that if they're overpriced, that's what happens. And if your property is overpriced, it'll sit on the market a very long time, and then you'll end up taking much less than if you would have listed the property at the going rate when you would list the property.
Thank you. What are some great sources that tend to be unadvertised that most awesome real estate professionals like you get their unadvertised properties below market value from? I'm talking, are there any divorce lawyers that you connect with? Are there any I know particular listings that you look at that most people just don't think about or don't have access to?
So having a good contact at a bank also helps, right? Having a good contact, whether it's a mortgage broker or financial planner or somebody that works with finance, I have a number of them that I work with, and I get the heads up with that as well. Like, hey, this person's looking to sell, or they need to sell, like you said, or this person's passed away, they're going through probate, you might be able to help them out. Having a professional with a bank has access to that. So that's a great source. A financial planner as well is also does that as well, because they're looking to plan. And for their future. And sometimes you might be able to, if they say to you, hey, I own this individual needs X amount of money, they don't want to go to the market, expose themselves to this. Do you have a network of personnel that works? The other thing was, believe it or not, we have a closed group of high performing agents in our office that we share listings with each other all the time. And we're saying, hey, this one's coming to the market. Are you interested in this? So having a good network of a realtor that has a good network with those like-minded individuals, that is also an avenue. Now, again, you mentioned a couple of things. Like one, I do have some lawyers as well. They do send me they do send me listings, and they say like, this, and they explain like, this person's going through probate, this person's going through divorce. Divorce lawyers, unfortunately, are part of the gig. It is that does happen. So having access to a lawyer in that kind of situation is really does help. And then you might do something even where I don't have this access, but I've heard of people being really good friends with like somebody in like a funeral home. So, if somebody does pass away, then they don't know what to do. Like, and when they're coming to a funeral, sometimes they don't have all of their, so if somebody passed away suddenly, they're going to a funeral home, they don't even know where to start. We started, one of my client, sort of client of mine, asked me to, in an old age home as well, as well as the funeral homes, just handing out flyers, just give them the flyers in case they were looking and didn't know where to start. That's also a great avenue to start to look for potential properties that haven't hit the market.
Thank you. For clients where they have to go through probate in order to take the charge of the property, what is the typical waiting time to make this happen?
It all depends on what, whether state you're in or whether province you're in, or a city. Like, so for example, here in Toronto, it takes about a year. It just, that's what happens. And but just outside, it's like, if you're flying into Toronto, you're not actually flying into Toronto, you're flying into a city we call Mississauga. And Mississauga is adjacent to Toronto, even though we call it Toronto. But if you're probating, that could take as simple as 3 to 6 months. It's much quicker. So I would always talk to you like whatever city's at, because every single city or every single area town has their own waiting time for probate. And I think a lot of it has to do with the amount of the population, or just like, the red tape that they have to go through. Unfortunately, here in Toronto, yeah, it's going to be about a year. And I always suggest, if people don't know what probate is, obviously that's it's a process of which when somebody passes away, that they're passing on their properties and their assets to the next of kin, et cetera. It has to, the government wants their taxes on it. So you have to figure out what the value is worth, and as well pay the taxes. Sometimes, like unfortunately, that happened with my dad when he passed away. Even though my mom and him, my mom and my dad were pretty much joint tenancies on a lot of things, there were certain properties which didn't automatically flow to my mother, and we did have to wait for a year for them to pay the taxes on those property for probate. So knowing that, if you are looking to sell a property, I always suggest wait until probate is done, because that can really ruin a sale. If you put up a property for sale that has to go through probate, because it could take a really long time, you may lose the buyers that had purchased the property because it was based on probate.
Thank you. What are some of the best strategies that property investors can leverage to buy properties at the best price, considering it is a buyer's market. So it could, because there's a lot of inventory, right? There's a lot of stock. And you can say that buyers can be choosers at the moment. And the other thing is that they know that if they wait around, maybe the properties might lose in value even further because people are starting to get desperate. So, is there a way for them to leverage the situation to actually get a higher discount? And if so, what can they do to make this happen?
Yeah, so when it comes to timing the market, the old adage always works. It's not timing the market, it's time in the market. So you have to go with the mentality of, that the sky's not falling. It's not always going to get better in the future because all we know is currently what is happening in the market today. It's hard to say like, oh, if you're always hoping for those rates to drop or those prices to drop. So when I talk to my investors, it's like, you can't look at it that scenario because for all you know, it's next month, it might jump up. So instead, what we do is we run the numbers based on current market values and current values as it is, because we only know what's happening in today's market. Like if you compare it to what happened like last year, for example, when Trump added those tariffs or threatened the tariffs, our market took a significant drop in price where we didn't really have a spring market, which just tends to be our top market. So that being said, we got to look at what the most recent sales of those areas are, what are selling in that area, what are sixplex going for, what are, like, if you're looking for a sixplex, if you're looking for just the regular condo, what are the prices is now as it were in the last few months, and how's the trend looking? So we look for forward trends, but we don't necessarily, we look at pretty much what's happening in today's market. So I would also make sure when I talk to my clients that they understand that. Because we don't know what the future is going to hold. We can look in the past. If we looked in the past, every year we had a 6.3 to 6.7% return per annum. Well, now this year, if you looked at this year's November numbers, we're down 4 to 5% compared to last year. It's bucked the trend. Who would have thought if you would bought in November of last year that the value of your property would go down this year? So, but is that going to continue to go? Like, no. So, what I always say is like for investors, run the numbers as it is as of today, and future value of the property. What can you do to add value to that? And then we can look at it in that kind of scenario. But I wouldn't always rely on the market trends because we don't know what's going to happen in the future.
Thank you. Tell us about some of political, socioeconomic factors that are currently impacting the Canada real estate market today. And is there anything that you see trending that can be leveraged to buy properties at the best price right now?
So yeah, great question. So if you look at the overall economics here we have in Canada, they're not as bad as they seem. Like our unemployment rate is a little bit higher than but it's recently it's gone down. I think it's here, I think it's down to like it was like 64%. The numbers is pretty much stabilized. So that number has been good. Inflation numbers, what the numbers based on the interest rates, we're trying to keep between a 1% and a 3%, and the ideal number is a 2% inflation. We're currently at that rate. So interest rates have also dropped in the last, year, the last few months. Now we're at an overnight rate, which we haven't seen in about 3 or 4 years, at the lowest rate we've seen. So we have a great interest rate. We have unemployment rate is stabilizing. GDP is one of those things we're always looking to increase. So, but the overall factor is like the reason why we're in a buyer's market, we're not seeing a lot of activity, is because of the uncertainty with our trade partners to the south, which is with US. We used to be the US's number one trade partner. Unfortunately, that's been surpassed by Mexico now. And one of the issues we have right now is we have buyer uncertainty. And buyer uncertainty mostly stems because we don't have that tariff number set in place. Until that number is set in place, we don't really have a lot of uncertainty, and it's forcing our CEOs and the heads of our companies to basically be at a stalemate. And the reason why we're at a stalemate is like whatever that number is, we can act upon that number. So if tariff rate is high, okay, great, then we can shrink in the company a little bit. There might be some layoffs. We're not going to make any economic investments in the future. But and sorry, in the current thing, but so we might, obviously you might have some layoffs. If the number is more palatable on a lower number, then yeah, we can invest. But right now it's a stalemate. So a lot of the heads of the companies don't know what to do. And until that number gets satisfied, we're not going to know. So how does that help you though as a buyer? Well, right now, the buyer uncertainty is really depressing them and putting a lot of downward pressure on price. And if you look at, for example, like our condo market, our condos right now, they're slated to lose another $40,000 to $45,000 in 2026 on the average unit. That's huge. We had a condo market previously to this where we had 82 months of consecutive growth. And all of a sudden, we had COVID hit, and it's the first time we saw a chink in the armor. And all of a sudden, the prices started dropping, never really recovered. In some places here in the GTA, like which is outside of Toronto, average sale prices dropped over $100,000 from 2021 till now. That's huge. So, as an investor or a first-time home buyer, knowing where the condo prices are, it now makes more sense for you to jump in at this price point because those numbers are not going to stay still. Another thing to understand is because those market prices have dropped, our pre-construction numbers, which is, you're buying properties on spec and they're supposed to be built 3, 4 years from now, those properties are no longer selling. People are losing money. But say they bought a property 4 or 5 years ago for $900,000. Well, they were expecting that market. You're buying for future value of the price. Well, in today's market, that $900,000 in some cases has dropped. If the resale value is like 600, so that property is now getting evaluated $300,000 less. You have a choice. Either you come up with that additional $300,000 because your mortgage only, the bank's only going to give you up to that $600,000. They're not going to give you the $900,000 you purchased. Or you might default on the mortgage or you sell it on assignment. And sometimes people are going to have to take a mortgage for that extra $300,000 in order to survive and in order to sell that property. So you have a lot of opportunity for investors and homeowners right now to purchase a brand new unit below what the old owners had paid for, and it's brand new. So the brand new unit also comes with warranties, right? We have tear-down warranty, which covers the building, which any time about things that happen in the property, you're like your all of your appliances are covered, your flooring, it's all under warranty. You're the first person to use the toilet. That also helps too, right? Like some people like that as well. So there are a number of factors which are factoring into that. But you have to understand this is a great opportunity between, I just said the prices are going to drop next year by, around $40,000 to $45,000. Well, if you're buying the next couple of years, that is a great discount. But you have to understand that those prices are not going to continue to decrease. The reason for that right now is we have a large supply. As the prices drop, demand will increase. Those number of units are going to continue to get eaten up and swallowed up. And if you look at the number of units coming to the market, which are, the pre-construction units, we had just under 30,000 each year, like in 2024 and 2025. Well, next year, the amount of new units hitting the market is going to drop to 20,000. And then in 2027, that number is going to drop to 15,000. In 2029, it's virtually going to be 0 units coming to the market. We have just under 700 units coming to the market. So we always have a large demand. If the prices are now more palatable, people, that demand will swallow up supply, which means prices will increase. Hence why we believe at the end of 2026, beginning 2027, the average price for condos is going to level off. And after 2027, you're going to be back into the positive numbers. So strategically, if you are an investor looking to purchase a condo or you're an end user looking at a condo, the next year, between now and the next 12 months, is a perfect opportunity. It's a perfect storm for you to really look into it. And if you're a first-time investor, condos sometimes are a great investment for you because they're mostly hands-off. And the reason why I say that, like all the big ticket items in which are you're purchasing, like that which might go in a problem if you have a home, are covered by the condo corporation. You got your roof, your HVAC, your floor, all that kind of stuff is all of your big components, which may cost a lot of money to replace, are covered by your maintenance fees. So you're not gonna, it's really rare you're gonna get a phone call in the middle of the night of a problem in your condo. So it's kind of like a hands-off investment. So it's good for first-time home buyers.
Thank you. Tell me also about property investors who actually are not looking to sell for the next 3 years. For whom perhaps buying property is more a question of rental value and high rental value. Is it a case that rentals are remain high and can actually potentially go higher in the Canada market? And if so, could that be like a strategy for people who want to buy properties at the best price right now and then not be bothered so much if actually the properties even go down $50,000 next year and then they will go up, 100,000 the following few years?
So you're saying so the value of rents have decreased over recent. So they've come down a lot. So I think the average one bedroom condo was around $2,600. It's down now down to just under $2,400. So you got to take that in mind. Then one of the reasons why is a lot of renters are now opting to purchase, and or the other thing we're seeing is a lot of them are moving because obviously the inflation's been high, cost of living's been higher. They're moving in with either their family member, or moving back with the family, or moving with their boyfriend, girlfriend, etc. But what to note is those buyers, and the reason why buyers are opting to purchase as opposed to rent right now is the average rent a mortgage payment is about $100 more than rent. So when you're paying a mortgage payment, now you're actually paying your own equity. Sure, you have to add on insurance and as well as your maintenance fees, but the buyers are understanding the long-term effects of purchasing as opposed to renting. If you rent for 5 years, all of the money you've spent is basically 100% interest is going to your landlord. It's not going to you. Whereas when you own a property, that the 5 years of payments you have, a lot of it you're putting towards equity. So that is very, very notable now to notice is like the rents have dropped for that reason. But the rents have only dropped because I think a lot of these would-be buyers are jumping back into the purchase market. Again, that's a trend that won't continue. Once you see those prices rise again, you'll also see rents increase as well. Plus, the amount of supply is going to decrease. So as the amount of supply of rents decreases because of these purchases, those prices are going to go up. So I would think that's why I think it's a great opportunity now to understand is for rents. Your rents will increase because right now they're suppressed because of that. I mean, they've come down, but that's not going to last a long time. As those units get satisfied, so you're going to have your rents increase, and as well as you're going to have the value of your equity increase. So those are two positive things. Now, it's also of note is here in Toronto and Ontario, I should say, if your property was built after November 15th, 2018, there is no rent control on that unit. So, say I rent a property to you, it's 2,500.
I can't hear. It
Hello?
froze. It froze. Okay,
Oh, there
it's
you
back
go.
on. It's back on. It's okay. It's good. You can continue. Start again,
Okay.
please.
Okay. So from the beginning or
Just
does
from
it?
the beginning of the sentence only.
Okay. Yeah. So if you're purchasing your property, if your property was built after November 15, 2018, there's no rent control on that unit. So currently, for example, in 2026, the average increase price that a landlord that is under rent control, the amount they're allowed to increase is only 2.1%, right? That no longer pertains if your building is built before, sorry, after November 15, 2018. So for example, if like I rented your property last year for $2,500, and all of a sudden I see the average rents are going up to like 3 grand. As long as I give you your 90 days notice, I can increase your property to that value, $500, $600. I can do that based on that because there's no rent control. So that's also good. So investors that are purchasing properties now, that especially we talked earlier on assignment, which is one selling their paperwork to another buyer, probably at a discount. Well, you have no rent control. So that's also very enticing to a buyer and investor in the future that they're not, even if they get if because what happens in a unit, sorry, it's very, very interesting for a buyer because they're looking they can increase the rent anytime they want. So what happens with a condo unit, so if you have 40 stories, every time a unit gets built, the owners get the keys. They're able to rent it out as long as they get registered a lot of times. Well, the problem is if they have all of these units come to market at once, if they're renting, that's going to be a really low market because there's more choice. But in a couple of years, you can increase to the market value because now there's only going to be one unit for sale, one other for rent, and you can increase the rent. So it's very enticing for investors to purchase in today's market on assignment for investment purposes, a condo unit.
Thank you. Are there any other actions that potential buyers can put in place to buy properties at the best price. Is there anything in terms of the mortgage that they can do, or in terms of putting more cash front or other measures so they can obtain some sort of discount or some sort of better terms for repayment of their installments?
Are you saying for the purchase price or helping you
Yes,
for cash?
for the purchase price, yes.
Well, the purchase price, I would say, is like in some situations you can take over the mortgage. So if the current owner has a really good mortgage, because remember, to break a mortgage, if they have like 2 or 3 years left on the mortgage, they're gonna have to pay that penalty. So if you could line up, if it's an assumable mortgage and you can have a discount, that is absolutely one advantage. Now, a lot of people prefer not to because they have their own mortgage broker and they probably have to top that up anyway. But that is a great point. You can see, I would always ask and say, hey, do you want to, like, if you're purchasing, what's your mortgage looking like? How is, like, what's your rate? How about we take over that rate and we don't have to take out that mortgage, and we can just give us a discount for this because we're gonna have to get that purchase. So that's a great point. It's the bigger banks will allow you to do it, but again, you have to go through the process with them as if you're doing a regular mortgage. Depending on who owns the mortgage, it's a viable option. Correct. On the other side, you ask if you put more down payment. More down payment helps you with the purchase price and closing the mortgage, but on for the seller necessarily doesn't affect them as much of that. They don't care as much as they only care about the bottom line is putting in their pocket, right? So if that allows you to earn more, then great, but that doesn't help you get a discount on the property, unfortunately. That's two separate entities.
Thank you. Is there anything else that you can do to actually obtain a discount, like to leverage the data of the market or something to kind of, because I'm thinking if I bought a property for 900,000 and it's worth 600,000 this year, I don't think I would sell. Like what? And
Well,
like,
there are ways. You also have to be careful of getting too low of a price, right? So this is everyone wants a low price, but the problem is if the price is lower than they own the mortgage, there's gonna be a problem. They can't sell that property, right? So what an agent can do on the side is like making sure before they're like if they're gonna accept the low ball offer, you can actually pull a report how much they owe on the property. And that's not well known from a lot of agents. We can do it. It costs like $50 or whatever it is on our side to do that. So you would know what their kind of their threshold is. So if you're finding a property and this seems like the seller's a little bit desperate, I would suggest saying, yeah, like maybe run the report, find out what their bottom line is, and then try to offer a little bit above that to make sure, the agents get paid. And that's, but if, for example, like you're saying, if you're owing $600,000, there's no way you can accept an offer for 550. The bank actually won't allow because they're going to have to pony up the rest of the amount of money. It just doesn't work. So that also you have to take in consideration. But there might be some, yeah, there that's one way of knowing what their bottom line is. I had a situation which my clients tried to purchase a property which was once listed for 3.8. We tried to get for 3.1 million. We tried. We gave him an offer. We gave him a clean offer, short closing, everything else. But the agent literally called me back and he's like, "Did you run the report?" And he knew what I was. I knew exactly what he was talking about. And I didn't at this point because I knew the number of 3.1 wasn't going to fly. But I would have run it for something else. And he's like, "If you run the report, you'll see we owe 3.4 million. We actually cannot sell for 3.1." And unfortunately, my guys could only afford 3.1. Only, but again, that's what's the situation we came into, and it's like that's another way of knowing too that if you can run a report or talk to your lawyer, and then you have to pay a lawyer, like I think they're able to pull what is owed on the property.
thank you. Tell us what other circumstances could allow a buyer to buy a property below market value?
So there are situations like a divorce. Even like that happens, a death in the family that also has happened. One we don't like to talk about, but if there is some sort of unnatural death on the property and you're willing to take a stigmatized property. Now, here we are supposed to disclose if there are, like I said, any unnatural deaths. What is an unnatural death? Murder, suicide, those kind of like anything that would kind of give a stigma to the home. And the reason why the stigma is a home, say you purchase a property you didn't know was a suicide home. Well, everybody in the street knows you're the suicide home. You're going to tagline that. It could affect the future value of you selling it. But that being said, now people die in homes all the time. We don't have to disclose if you die of natural causes unless you ask. But something that is stigmatized like that, it should be clear. That could be a huge discount on the property if you had a murder, a suicide, some sort of unnatural death somehow. If there was a drug deal happening on the home and they're able to combat that, you're okay with that. Another one is a grow op. Now, a lot of times of a property is growing marijuana in their property. The reason why it is known as it has a stigma to it is like what happens is that it's a tropical plant. A lot of times they're grown in the basement. Now, in a basement, obviously with the filter, if you don't filter the property good or well enough and it needs a lot of water because tropical plants need lots of water, it creates a lot of moisture and they need a lot of heat. Well, that heat will cause black mold. And if black mold gets into the foundation, the whole home has to be torn down. Unless, and that's the caveat, unless you are somebody that knows how to remove the mold and able to keep the structure of the home, that'll save you a ton of money in the long run. But as soon as somebody finds out it's a grow op and there might be some black mold, the property value dramatically drops. So there are ways around. If you own the suicide home or the murder home and it's, you're okay with it and you're going to live in it long term, that the stigma could set aside, that's also an opportunity for you. Or you're going to have it as a rental. You don't care as much about what happened in the home beforehand. Those are also avenues for you to get a purchase property much below market value.
Thank you. I think there's also like some sort of weeds that I can't remember, a Japanese knotweed or something that is supposed to be poisonous or something and hard to get rid of that can lower the property
That one I don't
color.
know about. So you're teaching me something today. Yeah, I didn't
I'm
know
not so
about that one.
familiar. I'm not so familiar because I have never had the situation, but I think I have read about that.
Interesting.
Tell us about the funniest or the most fascinating stories that you have of people who have bought properties at the best possible price through you. Tell us about like the case study of anyone who has done so and were they happy with it and why?
Well, there's a lot of those. And as a good agent, I think I'm a good agent. A lot of the times we get properties below market value because we do certain things. And like, for example, one of my clients, we got a property at a ridiculous price and we were in a bidding war, believe it or not. And it was at the height of the market. And we did something simple is we came with a really good offer, even though it wasn't the highest offer. We had the deposit ready to go in hand, which means the clients could firm it up. They knew we had an amount of money. It was more than the 5% that we needed. So here in Toronto, the going rate is 5%, and is a deposit. Deposits due within 24 hours, right? And it has to be liquid funds. And we had that ready to go, but I had a whole story, and or now we'll write like a whole letter and talk, and we kind of butter up the sellers and talk about like how wonderful it is. And when I walked into the property, I was like, guys, like you don't understand, my clients, they're ready to have kids. We know you. And I picked up on that they had kids. I'm like, I could see our family growing here. Here's what they love. And you pick specific, I was picking like, the kitchen, how it opens up so they could see the kids in the backyard. I picked specific things which I knew was going to play on their heartstrings, but I also had a really good offer in hand. Now, again, the agent came back to me, pulled me aside, and he said, listen, there's another offer. The guy's coming in much more money. He goes, if you just give me $1,000 more, because you have the deposit and he doesn't, we like you, we're gonna give it to you. So we saved at the time, it was like 20% on the property. Like it was just because we had, no, 20,000, oh, sorry, about 10% on the property, just because we were ready to go. And because they had confidence in me that worked. This also happened this past year. One of my clients, we purchased a property for $2.7 million. Right, which sounds like a big number until you realize that this client had bought the property back in 2016 for 2.6. So they basically lost money after holding the property for 9 years because we came and we were up a competition with another client. And I did the whole so this was all done online. And I was actually in Mexico. Upstairs, having a cigar, writing an offer. And I had a whole thing prepared. We gave them the closing date that they're looking for. We had a great deposit and we did have conditions. We had conditional home inspection and financing. But because we, maybe because like with the reputation really helped as well, I told the story of who they were and it really kind of played into us. So those are two examples which, with us going with not just, like sometimes it wasn't just the numbers. It was, it was portraying my clients, like the story of my clients, and helping with with the heartstrings and pleading it. And that's really helped us along the way. And that's just going the extra mile and just making sure and having conversations constantly with the other agents to explain who I was and my background and how I've known the clients and making them feel comfortable that they were going to close the property with my offer as opposed to another offer, which was higher, but he wasn't really sure that that client can close the property. Oh, you're muted again.
Okay.
There you go.
Tell me what needs to happen on a personal level for a property investor to buy properties at the best price so that he would leverage more than the numbers, like you said. And what needs to happen on a personal level in terms of like what they look like, their personality, the storytelling, like any other aspects that you think are important to put on the table to actually close the deal, especially when you have a situation where you could be gazumped, where someone else could offer a higher amount than you.
So what else besides what we were saying before? To get the market value of that, I think you have to be well prepared. And I think the best thing in the world to do is if you're a buyer, when you're hiring your agent, it is very important that you have an agent that knows how to communicate. They have to be able to communicate your needs and your wants and understand what you want, but then able to communicate with the other agent. So by having a so if we go see a property and my client's like and they had some questions, I always reach out to the other agent. We try to figure out what are their kind of closing dates, what are they looking for. You try to have a conversation with the other agent to know what their pain points are, right? That's huge, and that all comes into play. So that's how like an understanding and knowing who you are and how you work and who these clients are and the background knowledge and that is you're instilling confidence in the other agent that they can convey that to the sellers to say like, hey, these guys are solid. So this is where they're coming from. This is the number. Like, and this is, they're solid financially. They're solid with, their agent is good because he knows what you're looking for. He's giving you the closing date, et cetera. So the communication your agent is having with the other side, that should be huge for you to when you're hiring your agent to make sure you have the right person because that communication trumps everything else. Like that is the difference between I've literally turned down other agents because I didn't like them. Like my client did not feel confident with them even though they had a higher number. And that's happened before. So sometimes it comes more than just money. Like we've taken less money because they've had firm offers. Oh, a firm offer will trump any day over a conditional offer. Sometimes over $100,000. So having a client, having an agent that can communicate that, and then if you're up against competition, you're able to wave and go in firm and with taking the risk. That also.
Thank you. Tell us what awakened the titan within you to become one of Canada's top performing real estate professionals ranked in the top 1%.
Sorry, can you
Was
repeat
there,
that? What weakened me into
what,
that?
yes, what awakened the titan
Oh,
within?
awakened me. Oh, yeah.
Yes. Was there any catalytic moment that awakened that?
A little bit of my story I was an analyst before, so I'll spare you the whole details of what happened. But my dad was buying property since he was 20 years old. His dad died when he was 16. So our family are immigrants from Italy to Canada. He realized, what a great way to do is like was to own properties. And I was as a kid always following along with him. I didn't realize my dad was instilling me and like how to be a landlord and how to purchase and watching him pull equity. It wasn't until I had my first big boy job as an analyst and I realized how much taxes got taken out from you. And so I started to I read, my brother and sister-in-law gave me the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And from there I was able to analyze. And I realized what my dad was doing was what I was doing, what I needed to do. So we bought our first property, helped me with my property. And that was 20, 21 years ago. And that kind of instilled a love for me. But I had a full-time job. And up until I got packaged out of my analyst job, I was, basically I was a breadwinner. My wife is an entrepreneur, but I had all the benefits. I was basically, steady income. Entrepreneurs, obviously their pay is more volatile than the contract, sorry, than a worker, right? So as an employee. So up until I got packaged out, I was like, oh, I can actually do what I wanted to do now. I created a plan. I was helping people getting into investment properties, but I didn't want to be a realtor. And the reason why I didn't want to be a realtor is like, because I've been buying and selling properties at this point for 10 years, I didn't actually like any of the agents we were working with. Like, there was no communication. I was just not happy. It was just an industry I was not happy with, and I didn't want to be associated with them. Unfortunately, so I created this plan how to help other people get into investment properties. It was called the property manager, find it, fix it, run it. We can identify properties, we can fix them for you to make them into investment properties, and then we can run them for you with the property management. I had a whole package. I did a business plan. It was great. But we went to monetize it, we realized the glaring hole was the realtor. And instead of it, and because I didn't really have a good connection with a lot of my realtors that I've worked with, and I really didn't, other than my brother-in-law, he's a fantastic realtor. But other than him, I was like, well, I wanted to be able to navigate. I'm just going to get my license. And I told my dad. My dad got excited about it, and he's like, okay, he can finally, retire from being a hairdresser. And at this point, my dad owned like eight properties. And I was like, but he was more of like a slumlord and kind of like was running the properties to the ground. I was like, well, Dad, one of the reasons why I'm doing well in my rental properties is like I always put a good product forth. Let me take care of your properties. Let me renovate them. I'll use this part of my portfolio to show people what to do with the property manager. So he was excited about that. And I had started, and unfortunately, when I was working on ripping down one of his property, he passed away suddenly. He went for a walk and passed away. And my first real estate exam was 4 days later. And again, I went to the mentality, I'm like, I don't want to be a realtor. Did my first exam. I got 100% without studying. Obviously, and Italians are different. I guess when my dad passed away, we're doing a lot of drinking and just kind of like, we're sad. I was like, my dad was my hero. I didn't expect him to die. And we were supposed to do this together. And I remember to a point, my uncles and aunts like, you don't have to take this exam. I said, no, Dad wanted me to take this exam. I'm going to take it. But when I got 100% without studying, it didn't clue into me that I'd be good at this. I was still associating myself like, I don't want to be associated with these realtors. I did my second course, and then during the course, the teacher kept asking me questions. I was trying to help her out. Like she didn't know about, because I've been building and renovating properties for a very long time, she didn't know some of the basic stuff. Like what kind of materials you're using when you're building. And like, she was actually getting things wrong. And I kept putting up my hand. I'm like, that's not right. And I was correcting her a lot. And then when it came to math, remember I was a math major at one point, and I have a math break. All the math questions, she kept coming to me, and I'm like, you've been doing this for 20 years, and yet I'm teaching the course here. Again, it didn't help me want to be a realtor. But I started to realize I really was getting comfortable with it, and I started again my idea. By the time I took the third course, I came home one day and I said to my wife, I'm like, I think I'm supposed to be a realtor. She started laughing. She goes, well, it took you long enough, right, to realize. So I made it a mandate. I said, okay, when I get my license and I'm going to be a realtor, I want to make sure that all the pitfalls and the reasons why I didn't like the other realtors, that you're not going to have those experience. I want to elevate your real estate experience. And I had no idea what realtors made and what I was never, and I'm still to this day, never driven by money. My goal was always to help people, making sure all the pain points that I went through with all those other realtors, you will never have to go through. Like, you will never be surprised about when things are due or how much money things cost. Or like, we explain things from the beginning. When you're signing documents, I'm never going to be like, you sign this document and you're not reading what you're signing and you're not understanding it. I'm also not going to be that guy to hold you in a contract you don't want to be involved in. I only want to work with people that want to work with me. It just makes my job so much easier. I am not a conniving guy. I'm like, I want you to want to work with me. I had a point where most of my clients, like, I don't sign this buyer representation agreement until you work with me for a couple of weeks. Some of these people are like, hey, can we sign this document? We want to work with you. I'm like, it's okay. I'm the one pushing back saying we don't have to solidify this later. But that's kind of like where it started. Then I just gained momentum because when I started doing this and I had the knowledge, like I wasn't, even though I got my license 10 and a half years ago, when I started, I already had a good network. I already had a good network of renovators because I've owned rental properties for so long. My friends and family knew how much I loved real estate. It was just a good marriage right from the beginning. And it kind of snowballed from there. And then when I started doing videos and I started to explain to people, like I started to share my knowledge, the trajectory of my business really improved.
Thank you. Tell us where property investors can connect with you.
The best way I would say is, you can always check me out on my Instagram. It's David V. Cinelli, DavidVCinelli underscore realtor. That's probably the best way. Just DM me. And then from there on my Instagram, there's a link tree there. You can actually follow me on my YouTube and LinkedIn, et cetera. All my links are there. So that's probably the best way.
Follow me for more property wealth strategies.